Well, it's just on 6:30, so I'll just get started and we'll have a few more people join as we go through the evening. Welcome to Be Your Own Therapist, which is this time round a series of six fairly informal classes. We've got some really juicy topics to get into, but I'm hoping that we can have a fairly informal and relaxed atmosphere and that you'll be able to ask as many questions as you like, and we can discuss things as we go. So it's a course that is but falls both into the balancing emotion side of things of Buddhist psychology and also into Buddhism for beginners. What are the really essential elements when we start off on a spiritual journey or begin studying Buddhism to kind of make sure we don't fall into common pitfalls, and so we really progress very well and in a very integrated way. So my name's Miffy Maximilian. I'm a registered FPMT teacher and have been leading classes here at Ngāi Tahu Tongpa Centre for about 26 years now, 25 years. And this is the first class of this course, Be Your Own Therapist. So why do this course? Well, because who can afford a therapist for one? And even if you can, then there's a waiting list of 6 months anyway. So by then you're either dead or the emergency's been and gone. So actually, why we've got this course is because Buddhist psychology is radically different from Western psychology, because Buddhist psychology, the whole impetus is to become our own therapist and in the end to become a helper of others. So the approach is quite different. Also, the approach in Buddhist psychology is quite different in that it's not that some people have mental illness and some people don't, or some people are sick and some aren't. Everybody's sick in some way. Everybody's struggling. Everybody's suffering in some way. And that's like a great leveler. So it's like we're on a spectrum, and sometimes it's more obvious to others than others, other times. Sometimes it's more obvious to ourselves. But even people who seem pretty happy and everything's going well, they still suffer, they still have problems and doubts and uncertainties. It's just not immediately apparent. So we're all on this great vast spectrum. And in a way, we can think how samsara or cyclic existence, we're all traumatized by that, by the ups and downs of life, and by having no control over our mind. And so we're going along trying to deal with this. And so the whole point of this course is to give us some tools of what we can do. And why is because, from a Buddhist point of view, from Buddhist psychology, at the very core of our being, we're good, we're pure. The core of our being is inherently good. And everything else is just layers on top. And this means that we can train our mind, we can change our mind, and from a Western point of view, it means we can rewire our brain. It's not that where we find ourselves now that we can't do anything about it. So I'm really hoping that this course is going to be relevant whether you're Buddhist or not, whether you're religious or not. Yes, we all suffer in different ways. We all have a potential to remove not just suffering, but the causes of suffering, and that way to stop suffering altogether, not just kind of make things just relatively better. So the outcomes of the course, we'll have a look at some similarities and differences from Western psychology and Buddhist psychology, some fundamentals of where to get started, how to get started on the spiritual journey so we don't get stuck. So we don't lose track, so we don't fall off the wagon, so we don't get into trouble. And connecting ourselves, the Western culture, with Buddhist wisdom. And so we've got six classes, and generally the main topics that we've got Tonight, we're going to look at motivation, our purpose for doing things. Next week, we're going to have a look at the beginner's attitude and the pitfalls for beginners and how to head them off so we don't fall into them, and the kind of attitude that we can develop that'll see us from here all the way to enlightenment, to the cure. The third week, we're going to have a look at what to believe in. What is a refuge? What's a valid refuge? How do we know? The fourth week, we'll have a look at what we're striving for. What's happiness? The types of happiness? How come we're not happy? fifth week, I thought we'd look at the difference between empathy and compassion, in particular to do with not burning out, not becoming so overwhelmed with everything that we just grind to a halt. And then the last week, to bookend it, because this week we'll talk about motivation, on the final week we'll talk about dedication. And so that means how to not lose our energy, how to reinvest all of the effort that we put in, how to make sure it isn't lost, but that impetus continues and we don't waste our time. So in all of that, I'm hoping that you'll have questions. There'll be a little bit of homework, self kind of reflections to do as we go along. You can raise your hand. You can have your camera on and raise your hand and wave at me. You can raise your virtual hand, or you can type into the chat, whatever is more comfortable for you. You've all got the power to unmute at any time too. So please do, if I'm going ahead too far, too fast, or if you have a question about that particular thing, then please, don't just sit back and think, oh, I don't know if I should. This is the chance now to have some kind of discussion, as weird and odd as it is on Zoom. We'll muddle through. And so I have just changed the ticketing system, and I've put in an option to get a package for all of the 6 weeks. And then that way, if you miss a class and you want to listen on the catch-up sound file, you can do so, and I'll put up the worksheets for the homework and things like that, and also the PowerPoints that we'll have tonight. So that's there. If you wanted to get the package, then probably if you go to next week, because they'll be finished for this week because the class is on, but next week you can get, there's that option there. So the main benefits and incentive for us of a course like this is, number one, that you get some real confidence in asking questions, in analyzing things, in even being able to frame a question. And that's all to do with being an active participant, an active listener, an active reader, that we start having this conversation, even if it's just an inner conversation, but a conversation of our own inner journey. And to have some kind of joy in this, joy in the analysis and joy in the discovery and the curiosity, rather than being all judgmental on ourselves for not knowing enough quick enough, which can often happen as beginners, and get some real practical tools assembled for our journey. As a welcome, I suppose, I wanted to do a short meditation, and but also just to see who's here, and you can say a little bit about yourself. So before we get too much into the meditative state, how about if you can just, well, I can see your names, but I'd like to know what it was that brought you here tonight. Like, how come you signed up for tonight? Was there anything in particular, or anything at all? So I've got you on gallery view, and I can see a couple of you. Astrid, you're waving your pen around. So how would you like to just let me know?
Yeah, not a problem. So I've been going to the Langri Tongpa Center for a while and going to the meditations, but I've never tried any of the courses. So I literally picked up the calendar. I thought, well, what's coming up? I finished my studies, so I have a bit more brain capacity and time. So I thought I'd just give it a go. And this is the course that was Starting, and it sounded interesting, so that's why I'm here.
Great, great. Oh, so you've been coming to the Thursday night meditations or the Sunday ones?
Sundays.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Who else is around? Paige, did you want to say anything at all?
Yeah, no, I'll go. I guess what drew me to the class is that I've been doing like Western or CBT with therapy with a sort of traditional style therapist, and I just was a bit curious about, I guess, different other sort of ways to deal with some GAD or generalized anxiety symptoms. So yeah, I just wanted to see what sort of other thoughts or philosophies had to say about it. Yeah.
Well, a lot of our balancing emotions courses are a really good complement to Western therapy. So I'm going to a therapist myself too, primarily for just the more immediate nitty gritty details. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where I find that the Buddhist psychology really comes into its own is the context, and to give you a huge amount of hope and confidence. So I think they go really well together, especially things like CBT, that there's a huge amount that we can use and combine. So that's great. Welcome along.
Thank you.
Helen here says, I've been feeling out of balance lately and have been attending teachings before and have been wanting to attend this course for a while. Woohoo! That's great to hear, Helen. And yes, so out of balance or out of whack, out of step with reality. So it's a uncomfortable feeling, but the fact that you notice that is excellent, because you've noticed something's out of kilter. And that's like the number one thing we have to do, is notice that we're out of step with reality, and that's why we're suffering. So if we get back in step with reality, the suffering will naturally disappear. So you've kind of like you've spotted the symptom, and now hopefully a course like this will help delve into what are the causes. And Warbler, okay. Right, someone's changed their name to Warbler, but I didn't pay attention who it was in the beginning, so hello and welcome. Rachel, tell me.
Yep. Hi, sorry, my video is not working anymore. okay, well, Miffy knows me, but hello everyone. I've been coming to LTC for a few years now. This class is one of the first classes I've been to, and I found it really, really helpful, because I have anxiety and depression myself, and of course with therapy as well and with other things. I found it just really, I don't know, just learning to deal with emotions and just life in general. And I've been struggling for a little bit past couple months. So I thought, well, it's time to come back and I guess see what else I can pick up.
Yep, have another deep in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm very keen to be here.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm sorry to hear, but it's also good to hear. And and I mean, as we'll see today with the context of what drives us and what our motivation is, the Buddhist framework is so huge, but that the enormity of it gives us a lot of impetus. Well, at least it does with me. So
we'll
see.
I agree. Yeah.
As we get through, and we definitely have times in our life that are more challenging than others. And so, like Astrid, you said, now that you've got a little bit more mental space from the study, like when our mind is overwhelmed with challenges, we've got like almost zero mental space, don't we? Which it's very ironic, because that's often when we need all those tools. So now that we've got a little window of opportunity, it's really a case of seize the day, get a few more tools assembled so that as the next wave comes along, we can better deal with it. And, you know, Rachel, maybe in the end, you just end up surfing those waves, you know, instead of we're kind of all out of balance and falling off them, we're surfing them and we're able to harness the power of them.
Well, I think I'm getting a little bit better at surfing the waves, but of course it takes time and practice and, you know, that's okay.
And then we get dumped.
Yeah, there will always be waves, but, you know, things, yeah. I think yeah. I'm getting the basics down, so it's, yeah.
Okay, so I do have a screen share and... welcome to the other people here. I'm very glad that you're here. Don't ever feel that you have to say anything. It's entirely up to you. So our class, be your own therapist. Our warm welcome to everybody. And what I thought we'd do now is a short 9-round breathing meditation. And it's just a way of settling ourselves, but I don't want you to kind of go into a state where you get all settled and close your eyes and kind of drift off to sleep. I would like you to get settled so that your posture is relatively straight, that your back is straight, you feel alert. And we're going to try and create a balance where we're both alert and relaxed. And this is something that is quite tricky, isn't it? Because often when we're relaxed, the next thing is sleep. Or the only time we do relax is when we go to sleep. We very rarely can relax throughout our day in the midst of everything. So one of the ways that we can do it is to settle our posture first and having our back fairly straight. And imagine a fine thread of light running through the center of your body, just in front of your spine, up through your body and out the crown of your head, as if you're being pulled from the crown of your head, so that all the heaviness of your body is suspended and your posture just naturally becomes straighter. Hands in the lap or on the knees, whatever's comfortable. Have your head just slightly tilted downwards with the chin pulled in. And eyes just slightly open so some light comes in. Become aware you're sitting where you are in the room, all the rest of the world's going on around you, but here you are sitting nice and still. And so we're going to do a similar thing with our mind. There's all the business going on in our mind, but we're just going to focus our mind on one thing, which is becoming aware of the breath, the rising and falling of your breath. So you let the body breathe itself. You don't have to change the rhythm of the breathing. Just become aware of that natural rhythm. And then I'd like you to imagine as you're breathing that as we'll do this, what's called the 9-round breathing. So the first three rounds, the first three, is to imagine that as you breathe out, imagine that you're breathing out through your left nostril all of the stress and worry and anxiety in the form of black smoke, that all of that tension that's held within your body, you breathe it out, you release it with each breathing out through the left nostril. And as you breathe in radiant, blissful energy in the form of light that floods through your whole body. And so you breathe that in, you can imagine through the right nostril, comes in through the right nostril and floods through your whole system. So if you can, three long, deep breaths out through the left nostril, breathing out all of the stress and the worry, and in through the right, breathing out this radiant, clear energy. So as long as you've done three really long, leisurely breaths, then you can keep breathing like this to fill in the rest of the time. And then we swap the nostrils over. And this time, as you breathe out through the right nostril, the right-hand side of your body. Release all of the disturbing emotions, all the depression and unhappiness, all the resentments. Release that toxicity, breathe it out in the form of the black smoke. And when you breathe in into that clear space, breathe in that radiant, blissful light. All the enlightened qualities, all the good qualities that flow into you, your body becomes radiant. So again, three long, leisurely breaths, and then just continuing in your own time. Now feel as if all of those major inner toxins are gone, those major disturbances, you've breathed them out and released them. And now for the final three, breathe out through both nostrils. And this time feel that smoke begins to get a little bit more like mist, a little bit clearer as you breathe out even the very subtle negativities and problems. They begin to thin out. And as you breathe in through both nostrils and feel that light, all of the wisdom and compassion and abilities of enlightenment flow into you and your body becomes more and more radiant. So through both nostrils three times, long, leisurely breaths. And when you finish this 9-round cycle, then just for a few breaths, leisurely breathing in and out this radiant clarity, feeling your body energized, clear, free of aches and pains, and your mind alert, relaxed, spacious. And just focusing on the clarity of the breath, breathing in and breathing out. And from this sense of spaciousness and ease, then we can reflect, what is our motivation for being here tonight? We've already discussed a little about it. We can really deepen our purpose for being here and make it very specific and clear to ourselves. And whatever the immediate concerns might be, fundamentally, we're here for our own happiness, and so that we can help those around us, so that we can bring a real purpose and meaning to our life, make our life worthwhile. We all have this yearning for purpose and meaning. We can bring that purpose to our life. We all have an instinctive wish to be happy and to be free of suffering. It's not something that we have to think about, it's there. And this is what we have in common with everyone in this class, everyone in our life, regardless of the differences. So this fundamental commonality that we have, what draws us together, then we can set our purpose for this course, that we ourselves can take the most benefit from it, but that we can share that with others, that we in turn can become a help for others. And from a Buddhist point of view, we wouldn't put any limit to our motivation or our purpose. We'd start from where we are, our immediate things, and we just let it expand. Why put a limit on it? We can let our motivation expand so that it encompasses the ultimate welfare of ourselves and all living beings. That can be our purpose, and then we have everything in between. And so with this set as our motivation, then you can bring your focus back to the room, to the screen. And I wanted to start with this meditation in particular, this 9-round breathing, because it's a very interesting neurological hack or physiological hack, because throughout the day, we favor one nostril or the other. So we usually, one nostril is a bit blocked and the other is clear, and that's for about 4 hours. And then about 4 hours later, it swaps over. And 4 hours after that, it swaps over. And as with our subtle nervous system, our physiology, then also right brain and left brain, which, what kind of way that we're focusing on the world. And so this meditation, it really balances everything, and in a very short amount of time. But it's also fantastic because of the imagery in there of just breathing out those toxins. And that leads us to this fundamental Buddhist understanding of who we are and the nature, our nature, the nature of our mind. And from a Buddhist point of view, our mind is naturally clear. Our nature is naturally good, radiant. So then how come we have problems, and how come we get stressed, and how come all of the negativities and everything come along? Well, that's because of our inner toxicity and all of the disturbing emotions. And it's like we're pumping in these disturbing emotions every day. So like these smokestacks, right? The sky, naturally clear, blue, beautiful, the vault of the sky. And what do? We just every day, we just pump in negativity, pump more and more and more. So at present, our mind is polluted with clouds of toxic emotions, with clouds of assumptions and projections and doubts and worries and all of the disturbing emotions that arise jealousy, hatred, resentment, pride, attachment, clinging, grasping, possessiveness. I mean, the list goes on, and we know it very, very well, don't we? And so these just arise in they arise in our mind just through the strength of habit. And then we just dive right into them. It's like diving into these clouds. And as we know, when the sky is covered with clouds, or like when the bushfires were on and there was just smoke everywhere, it's almost impossible to remember the blue, to remember that above the clouds is this limitless expanse of clarity when we're in the thick of it, because we're so overwhelmed by the immediacy of those disturbing emotions. But from a Buddhist point of view, that our mind is naturally clear, like the sky is naturally spacious. The toxic emotions, they come and they go. Thank goodness there's a little bit of respite every now and again. Sometimes it's far and few between, and that's when we get really, really stressed and overwhelmed. So number one, what we've got to do is actually stop pumping in any more of the toxicity. So it's no good trying to find that blue sky when we're still pumping in the toxins. So we've got to learn how to stop those disturbing emotions from running away with us, from just becoming stronger and stronger. So this way to, figuring out, and Buddhist psychology has a huge amount on this, on how to stop pumping in more of that toxicity. And then what can we do? So the Buddha found a way to remove those toxins, to remove the clouds. It's what enlightenment is, becoming free of all of those negativities and their causes. So not just removing the smoke, but the smokestacks, what's causing them. And because the nature of our mind is the same as the Buddha's, therefore, we also have this potential. So let that sink in for a moment, that the nature of our mind is the same as the nature of the Buddha's mind. By nature, we are the same. Where the difference is that the Buddha went through this whole process and removed those toxins and stopped pumping in anymore and removed the causes and achieved this liberated, enlightened state. And we just haven't done that yet, but we have the potential to. So I find this is the paradigm that is so, so powerful and really good to come back to again and again. And I mean, have you ever just lied on the ground and looked at the sky and just watched the clouds? They arise and they change and then they go. It's such a good thing to do. And if we just recognize that all these disturbing emotions and thoughts and ideas, while they're happening, they're so real, but they can also go. They can also dissolve. It's not like they go somewhere else. They just dissolve back into that natural purity of the mind. So, if we act badly or if we feel badly, it's not because we're fundamentally flawed, because we're a bad human being, because we're broken and other people aren't. It's just because there's more toxins in at the moment. And this is a way that we immediately can cheer ourselves up when things are really, really bad. It's because we're overwhelmed. It's not because we're broken or fundamentally wrong. So how are we going so far? Any questions or comments about this, this kind of setting the scene? Oh, well, I found out who Warbler is. That's good. Anthea's mum. That's good. So part of this, recognizing our nature, one is to even have the courage to think of it like this, then the next is to remember, especially when things get difficult, which is kind of like the least time when we're likely to remember. So years ago, one of the students here, they immigrated from England family from East End. Very cheery family. And so Brian, one of the kids, he must have been in his late teens, I think. And he said, so they got the plane from England to Australia and in the daytime. And he said, as the plane went up through the cloud layer of England, he just went, oh, my God, it's sunny up here. It was just mind-boggling. And even when he told me, like, you know, 40 years later, he's telling me about this, it was still as fresh in his experience as that day. So that's all we need to do, is just to remember that up there, up above the cloud layer, it's clear and bright. And that's like the nature of our mind. And because of that, it's worth putting in the effort. That in a way is something quite different from Western psychology that doesn't have nearly as positive a view as that. That kind of thinks we've just got to live with our disturbing emotions and our anger and our resentment and stuff because it's natural. But it's missing the whole point of this nature of our mind. So we'll keep coming back to it as we go through.
Sorry, Miffy. Can I just say something? I was just thinking, like, sometimes though, when it's been going on for a while, but yeah, I feel like you gotta have a lot of faith, a lot of confidence that exists, because you forget that it's a thing. Like,
that's right. We forget. So, and me too. I forget as well. Yeah. And so, this is why we need to have a good motivation and be proactive and set our motivation each day, because that's how we'll make sure we don't forget. Because if we just kind of barrel into the day without any awareness of why, what our purpose is, we'll forget. It's just a natural thing. So it's kind of why I wanted to start with this topic of motivation. So, for instance, Rachel, like, what gets you up every morning? What is it that drives you? What's the difference between you actually getting up and not staying in bed all day?
I know staying in bed all day doesn't help. It makes me feel worse. Like, I realize that. So I guess, yeah.
Yep, so that's something from your own experience, from trial and error.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so, but what is it that propels you into the day? Like, what are you going to meet in the day? What is it that you're thinking about the day?
Well, I try to have a good motivation, but sometimes it just feels like just lip service, like, oh, to benefit all sentient beings. Oh.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be a good person and everything. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a very big one, isn't it? So is there anything in between? Like, is there any time when you get up where it's different? Like, if, you know, if we've ever been on holiday, what gets us out of bed on a holiday is quite different from when we're just going to work. So one of the things on holiday is, even though I might be really tired, I'll go, no, I've got a really limited amount of time. I'm going to get the most out of it. So I get up even though I'm tired. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm not like, oh, no, I'm on holiday.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
So there's something that frames our motivation. So what else? What about other people? What is it? How come not only did you get out of bed, but you came to this class? So what is it that's the motivator? What's the reason? Who? Someone wave at me or let me know. We've got one in the chat. Oh, okay. So Warbler says, my motivation is knowing that after being horizontal for hours, I need to be vertical for my health. Right. So health gets you up. Well, that's good that health gets you up, because health doesn't necessarily get me up. I just know, and I just get like, you know, a numb bum or something, and I'll just turn over instead. So health as we get older, health becomes a more immediate and obvious concern and a motivator. So, yep. Tammy, coffee and my 4-year-old gets me motivated. Ha ha, that's right. That is a big blessing. So these are kind of external things to us, aren't they? Or they're fairly immediate. And I think, you know, there are times in our life where we question this. We go, well, what's the point anyway? Many of us, first time this happened was sometime when we're a teenager, and we're just like, well, why? And we look at around us what the motivation is for other people, and with our black and white teenager thinking, you know, it either impresses us or it doesn't impress us. We go, well, what's the point? Why? Why do I have to get up? Why do I have to do well in school? All of these things. So when we're looking at what motivates us, I found it's useful to start digging into what's our default motivation. What propels our day? Is it something that we're looking forward to? So most of us, when we go to work, we're not looking forward to going to work. We're looking forward to the benefit of work, the money. We're doing it for the money, or we're doing it because we want to support the people there. It's very rare that we have a job that we love, that we look forward to doing. And if you get that, wow, how amazing. Often it's something that we're looking forward to, like a holiday, going on retreat, visiting family after a very long time, all of those things, or a treat for ourselves. We might have some ambition, some lifelong thing. You know, we've always wanted to be an actor, or we've always wanted to write a book, or we've always wanted to work with little insects and critters, or whatever it is. And so our life is meandering along, trying to head in that direction. What about the mood? What mood are we in when we get up? Are you happy, panicked, tired? What's the general thing? Just put your head back under the blankets, like, oh, push snooze.
Yeah, pretty much at the moment.
Is there anyone here who bounds out of bed? Which, you know, I mean, when we start looking at it and we realize, yeah, our time on earth, it's limited, it doesn't, it's not a guaranteed done deal. This is a really sorry state of affairs, isn't it? That while we're aware of that day by day, we can be so pushed down and overwhelmed. Oh, Helen, lately I feel angry and I can't put my finger on why. Ah, well, again, really good to have noticed that. So feeling angry is like just a stepped up feeling of dissatisfaction. Of things just not being the way we want them to be, or things just not being quite right. And so our annoyance kind of ramps up a bit. And if we're not careful, it ends up being like great big toxic plumes coming out of the chimney, and it gets more, and it just takes one little thing to go wrong, and we lose it. What happened there? You know, but because we're right teetering on the edge. So Buddhist psychology is a really interesting approach, has a really interesting approach, because we notice that annoyance, and then instead of jumping to all the things out there, we look at the annoyance and see where it's coming from within. And even if we can't pinpoint the whys and the wherefores, will pinpoint, oh, it's because I'm dissatisfied. And usually we're dissatisfied because we're not getting what we want, and what we want is out there. Whereas actually, we're not getting what we want because we haven't cultivated a sense of contentment. We don't have that sense of well-being and contentment in our mind. And so even though we try and find it out there, we can't find it. And we don't even know that's a problem until it's thwarted and we get a bit annoyed. So getting annoyed is like the first step of noticing something's not quite right. Ah, Tammy, not bounding out of bed, but overwhelmed by all the things I need to do in a day. Yep, I get that. And don't you find too that if it's just those things to do in a day, it feels so heavy. So part of setting our motivation is to look below those things to why am I doing those things? So instead of pay the bills, got to go to this appointment, you know, all the immediate context, we look, well, why? Why am I paying the bills? Why am I going to work? Why am I going to this appointment? Why am I looking after my health even? We've got to have a good reason why. Okay, so Warbler says, sometimes happy enough, but sometimes I just don't want to confront the day. it's good to have a commitment to someone else, so I don't want to let them down. Yes, so there too is a key. There's someone else, someone more than just ourselves. Okay, so how are we going? Any other comments or questions before we dive into the power of a good motivation? Okay. Tammy said, yep, feel heavy, but also don't have time to think. Yep, that's right. We have to make that time. That time isn't going to naturally come to us. And that's really hard. And often it isn't about the amount of time either. It's about being able to get into the right headspace. And that too comes from setting this motivation. So let's have a look, the power of a good motivation. So we have number one, we've got to figure out what it is that's driving us. What's our default? Is it panic? Oh my God, I've got to pay the bill or go to this interview. Is it necessity? The four-year-old is here. I'm busting to go to the loo, you know, some deadline. Is it just habit? I've always gotten up. It's what everybody else does. What would the neighbors think? Is it ambition? Is it a specific thing? Is it I just want more? Is it I've got nothing else to do and I'm bored? Just going on autopilot. So figuring it out, and it may change over time. So if we have a goal, the clearer our goal, the more assured our success. So if we're thinking now, we can't figure out why I'm not getting out of bed in the morning, then of course our life is going to be haphazard. We're not going to have a purpose. So if we want our life to be a really meaningful, successful, beneficial life that's going to help ourselves and others, make a positive mark on the world, lead a fantastic legacy, be a help, not a hindrance, all of those things, we've got to be clear about it, clear about the goal. And how do we get clear about our goal? Well, one is to be proactive and actually set a motivation in the morning that carries you throughout the day. And this is like this lady here doing the long jump. So when you do a long jump, once your feet leave the ground and you're in the air, there's very little you can do. That's it. You're in the air and you're just going to go as far as you can go and then you'll hit the sand. So what the long jump depends on is the run up. It's quite a weird looking thing too, isn't it? If you've seen a long jump, they do run, 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 and then they do the three long strides, one, two, three, and then lift off. So everything depends on what came before. But normally, we kind of come to consciousness about here where this lady is halfway through the air and we may or may not have done a good run up. So setting our motivation on purpose in the morning, and we'll go into that in a moment in a little bit more depth of how we do that. But it's what determines how the day turns out, and then it determines how our life turns out. In our life, what matters more is the why we're doing something, not the what we're doing. Because we may never end up having a meaningful job out there. We may never end up being able to cure cancer or cure malaria or make everyone in our family rich or whatever it is. But whatever job we're doing, if we have a reason for it, we can do a really boring job. We can do a really menial job, like just, you know, being a janitor or a cleaner, and have a huge sense of satisfaction because we have a purpose, a meaning behind it. We have the reason why. So in our culture, there's still a whole lot of jobs like being a cleaner or a waitress or a bus driver or whatever that are seen as lowly. And there's a whole lot of jobs that are seen as having status, as if it's in the job itself. But actually, it's to do with our motivation. That's what actually makes it, whether it's meaningful or not. So one of the questions you could ask yourself is, well, what would you be doing right now if you knew you could not fail? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Because often we just put a lid on it, don't we? We put a limitation. But if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you be doing right now? What would you be doing? Does anything come to mind?
I would do the 108 Yumnes in France.
There you go. So immediately something's come to mind, something really enormous, that retreat in France. Yes. It's what, you know, it's eight months or something. So if you knew you couldn't fail, it's like saying if we really understood the nature of our mind as being in the same nature as the Buddhas who became enlightened, we can too. What would we be doing now if we really knew that? If we knew we couldn't fail? Anyone else?
How about you, Miffy? What would you do?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'd do the 3-year retreat and attain calm abiding and the rainbow body and reach enlightenment in one lifetime.
That's great. That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's one of the things I do. And I'd probably just move overseas and lead everything online and build a artificial intelligence chatbot reference for the entire of the Buddha Dharma. Yes, Tammy says, if all my bills were paid, I'd make music. Yeah, exactly. So this is a way of getting to what actually matters to us, what we love, where our energy is going that we may not yet have the courage for. And it's good to know. Helen says, I'd write a book. Yes. So unless we can even put words to this, we're never going to accidentally write a book. So the very, very beginning is having the courage to think about what we'd like to be doing. And underneath that, you know, is all why and who for. And underneath all of that is understanding what's possible with our nature, with the nature of who we are. So just like with the long jump and you have the three skips before you leave the ground, one of the ways that we can set our motivation is to go, oh, I'd like to write a book, and then ask why 3 times. So this is how we deepen our motivation, whatever it is. Oh, I want to pay the bills. Why? Ask why 3 times. And it helps us go deeper. So if we want to write a book, so who said, Helen said, if you want to write a book, so why? So part of it might be, you know, who for? it might be, I mean, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but asking why, like, you know, why would I want to lead classes online? Well, why? Because number one, it's way easier for me to do something on Zoom than on Zoom and in person at the same time. So that's that. And there's like, yeah, Miffy, but why do you want to lead a class in the first place? And you go, well, okay, because I want to be able to benefit people. I want to be able to share what I'm so excited about. And I want to be able to use my, you know, skill, which is words. And then you go, well, why, Miffy? And it's like, ah, oh, okay, well, why? Not just to entertain you guys for a night, but why? Because human beings are precious and you're precious, and I want to be able to actually help people change their lives. Okay, why? Why should we bother changing our lives? Why? Because of our potential, because what we can actually do with a human life. So you keep asking why at least three times until you get to why for liberation and enlightenment. But we've got to show the workings. It's like with maths. You've got to show the workings. You've got to go step by step by step. Because otherwise it ends up, like Rachel, you're saying, oh, yeah, why am I getting up? Oh, to benefit all sentient beings, yada, 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 whatever. It doesn't have the power. So we've got to join it up with all the steps, and how we do it by asking why. That's the skips, the three skips before the long jump. We can adjust it. We can add in a couple of other things. We can think short term, the immediate, medium term, which might be a few years, a few decades. Long term, from a Buddhist point of view, it's this life and next life and the one after. So in terms of the time span, it's really good to build in, to try and bring to mind the different time spans. And the other thing is the two purposes, self and others. So what do we want for ourselves? Why are we doing it? What's our own purpose? What are we hoping for? And, you know, so for instance, we don't want to just hope for, I hope I don't have too much depression and anxiety for the rest of my life. We got to hope for, I want to be completely and utterly free of depression and anxiety and all of its causes in this lifetime, minimum. And I want to become a safe person that will not get angry and retaliate no matter what. You know, we've got to have the purposes for ourselves, and then we have the purposes for others, how we want to help others. Who do we want to help? So that really makes the motivation already. It's building it up fantastically. That's the run up. So from a Buddhist point of view, we've got these two types of motivation. Causal motivation and momentary motivation. So years ago, someone thought, oh, causal motivation, that's cool. Casual motivation. The Buddhists are really casual about stuff. But no. Causal. It's the causal motivation, how you start the day. And that's this one where you consciously build your motivation up step by step. Those steps of the long jump. And you do it at the beginning of the day before you leave the house. And if you've got a really busy day, before you get out of bed. Because once you're out of bed, it's all over. It's all, you know, it's already, you're already in the air. So you've got to be quite disciplined about that. And then throughout the day, what happens is you have a momentary motivation, the spur of the moment. And so this is when something happens and you respond. Now, what do you think if you've got a really strong morning motivation, causal motivation? As you go through the rest of the day, you won't have to keep on going, oh, why am I living? What's the purpose? You already know. So you just need to do this. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing here. and it comes automatically. And so if you set a really strong motivation in the morning, then even if you meet difficulties, even if someone's really rude to you in the shops, you know, they don't serve you. They serve it there and there and not you. And like, hello, I exist. So instead of getting overwhelmed by that and having a negative situation escalate, you'll have a bit of annoyance come up and then you'll go, ah, but in the scheme of things, my purpose here is to help others and at least not harm them. So it's okay. I can suck it up. They'll find me eventually. I'm just, you know, stopping traffic here. And so it doesn't get out of hand. If we set a strong motivation, the causal motivation, our momentary one, it won't be reactive. If someone's angry at us, we won't respond with anger in turn. If someone yells, we won't just yell back. If someone pushes us, we won't just push back. What'll happen is we'll have the initiative. We'll have natural control over our mind. And we'll be able to respond how we want to, as our best selves, without having to put in all this effort into trying to be a good person. We'll just have that kind of mindfulness and it'll come back up again. Ah, yes, this is how I want to be in the world. This is how I want to respond in the world. So we'll have so much more energy. So there's other the causal motivations. I've kind of put a few from our Western canon in here because it can be a very complex thing. Mostly it's by default. We don't even know what they are. And a lot of psychotherapy is to find out what's motivating us. And a lot of philosophy is also about what's motivating us. It depends how much awareness we bring to it. So, you know, one of my favorite philosophers who's not a Buddhist, Nietzsche. And so he talked a lot about the will to power, our urge for fame, recognition, appreciation, domination over others, to be better than others. It's this will to power. And we don't even know we have it. We're just going in that direction. Or we have a will to money, where money is the deciding factor, where we want to be upwardly mobile. We don't want to be downwardly mobile. We want to have more, not less. The affluent culture. So this will to money, we see what happens if that's our driving force. We get money, but we get a really disjointed family life. We get pollution in the environment. We get really skewed politics, you know, all of these things are disintegrating society if it's money number one. To the extent that, of course, you know, people think if it can't be quantified in economics, it doesn't exist. So will to money is one thing that drives us. We may or may not be aware of it. A will to pleasure is another one. We just want to feel good, foodies. And if we've ever binge watched anything, so all of these are like different currents pushing us around, and they push us around because we're not aware of them. So what we want to do is make it something that's long-term, that's altruistic, that has meaning to us, that aligns with our values, and isn't just these unconscious currents that are just there. So comments, questions? Does it ring any bells? Yeah, good, good.
Yeah, that reminds me of the eight worldly concerns. It's like the
very, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The eight worldly concerns, very similar. That's right. All of these driving factors. And they harm us when we're not aware that that's what's driving us, or when we think that's as far as we can go. So those worldly concerns, like the will to power or the will to money or the will to pleasure, they're okay for a while, but they don't bring us that. They don't bring us the lasting happiness. And anyone, you know, there's so many, how many movies, how many stories do we do we have of like the really powerful businessman with, you know, multi-billion dollar company and whatever, and then you know, his son or daughter gets sick and it's an incurable disease, and they say, I'd give anything to be able to help my child. So then you realize, money isn't everything. And then, I mean, even just this week, we had someone come in to the shop to buy some incense, and they were saying, I was married for 21 years and my wife died just, you know, this week, most unexpectedly. You know, and so he's kind of crying and he's buying the incense because they're saying all of these prayers, and the incense keeps on burning down too quickly. They're doing like a continuous prayer vigil. And so he said, if I could do something differently, I wish I just had spent more time with my wife, because time is something that we don't know that we have when we have it. Wow. It's so profound, and it's right there, but it's not there unless we bring our mind to it. Otherwise, we're thrown into it in an extreme situation where it happens like this. So here's some examples of good motivation. How to set the motivation to last the whole day. So this is a great one. It's an all-purpose. Today, I'm going to try and benefit whenever I can. And at the very least, I will not harm. And if we say this out loud in the morning before we get out of bed, it is amazing, because these words are like your lifesaver, that in the heat of the moment, when someone's rude to you or cheats you or something, they come back to you and you go, I'm not going to retaliate, because even though I can't help them, even though I can't stop the situation, I'm not going to contribute more harm. Right there, you've made the planet a safer place. You've made your life worthwhile. It's such a great thing. So from the altruistic point of view, you start off with going, however I can benefit, I'm going to try and do so. So then you're ready. And so then when something happens and there's a window of opportunity to help somebody, you're not too shy. You're ready and you go and you do it. You know, don't go, maybe it's not my place, or what will people think, or I don't know what to do. You're already primed. And if you can help, you do naturally. And if you can't help, if there's nothing that you can do, you don't make it worse. Another thing that we can do with our motivation is to say, I'll stay aware of every action of my body, speech, and mind, and not allow anything to upset me. So again, this is having just some mindfulness, some presence of mind. How am I being in the world? How am I treating others? What's my communication like? What's my mind like? Am I a bit annoyed? Or, okay, I've got to make allowances for that and go a bit slower today. Be a bit kinder to myself. A bit more patient with others. So that's when we stay aware of every action of our body, speech, and mind, that's what it means. That then when the unexpected happens and things change or things go wrong, we don't just automatically get annoyed. We don't allow it to upset us. We keep our equilibrium. And the quote from His Holiness, whenever possible, I'll show kindness. It's always possible. And this is profound, isn't it? Because that's really what makes the difference. Just someone wanting to show kindness or wanting to help us, even if they know they can't help. What a difference it makes to us. Just a kind word, a kind gesture. So I'll put these on the worksheet just so that you can remember them, memorize them, say them every morning, make them your mantra. It'll change the tone of the day. Now, I've got a couple of examples of this in practice. So I've got functional and dysfunctional. I've got two examples. One is, what's the motivation, say, for becoming a doctor? So a functional motivation that's in step with reality. You've got a causal one and a momentary one. So the causal one, you put in all that effort to becoming a doctor because you want to help others. You want to alleviate suffering. I watch all those TV shows of the ER and emergency and paramedics and things like that. And that's what they dedicated their lives to, helping others. They just want to help and alleviate suffering. But how did they get there? They had to study. They had to go through years of training. They have to do really long shifts. They've got sore feet, all sorts of things. So the momentary motivation, say they're doing the study, I've got to get through these statistics. They strive for top grades. You know, they work really hard. So if you forget your causal motivation, if you forget, I want to be able to save lives and help people, you're going to be one of the people that drops out in the statistics term, that drops out of pre-med and goes, oh, I can't hack this anymore. And why do people drop out? Because they lose the big picture. They lose their causal motivation. But you need that momentary motivation just to get through the grind, to learn the anatomy, to do the statistics. You've got to set those little goals. You've got to set that, you know, pass this exam and do this assignment and show up on this day. They're all the momentary ones, but it's driven by the causal. And that's how it functions well. But there's a dysfunctional way. So any of you had a negative experience at a doctor's? I have. Their momentary wish might be, you know, to please others and help, but it's not the causal one. The causal one might be status. I'm important because I'm a doctor. It might be the money, though less and less so, unless you specialize or unless you're doing plastic surgery. And you just, you know, it's a great way to make money. Or it might be that you're really smart and you're pushed into it by your parents. You got these grades, you have to become a doctor. But all you wanted to do was write a book. So the causal motivation, if we're out of step with that, if we're not happy with that, everything goes along fine until, and this is what happened to me, the momentary motivation, my doctor was fine until I challenged him and asked, well, why? And he said, I kid you not, he said, don't you worry your pretty little head about that. So that's why he's appearing in my course now. Because if our causal motivation is dysfunctional like that, everything can seem nice on the surface until push comes to shove. And then the pride comes and the rudeness and the disrespect for patients and the don't you know who you're talking to. Yes. So what we've got, part of this too, I like setting video homework every now and again. So there's a great film, The Doctor, with William Hurt in it. And I've put this up because actually William Hurt is a great Buddhist practitioner. He, I actually saw him at the Dalai Lama's teachings in Australia. He was there for the whole lot of the teachings when they were in Sydney. So, you know, quite low key. And this movie was really interesting about a doctor who's quite proud, who's never been sick, who doesn't have any experience of the other side and no humility, and his journey and what the motivation is. So it's a great movie. Here's another one, functional and dysfunctional, to do with sexuality. So if we're in a partnership and we're going to jump in the sack together, there's a causal motivation and there's a momentary motivation. So if we're in a functional relationship. It's a healthy relationship. We're good for each other. We bring out the best in each other. Then, and we look what the causal motivation is, it's going to be a humanitarian one. It's going to be this natural human wish for connection, for sharing emotion, for being real, vulnerable, authentic, to actually give pleasure to the other person, not just it's all about me. Have the courage for, you know, a conversation with the whole of your being. So, I mean, it's a deep, deep human need, connection. And, but when it comes to sex, for instance, if we don't have the momentary motivation, it's just platonic. So to actually jump into bed together, there's got to be some desire or lust, and that's the motivation in the moment. And if there isn't the motivation in the moment, then it's a platonic relationship, and then that's fine. So there is what's driving it, and then there is the actual immediate circumstances. So in a you know, all perfect world, functional relationship. But then we have, of course, many of us have experienced dysfunctional relationships. And so let's do it the other way around. So the momentary, we might really like someone. We might be all nice and lovey-dovey and romantic, and we've got it all planned out and everything's going really, really nice. But what's driving it underneath? What's driving us? It just might be neediness. We're terrified of being alone. It might be narcissism. We need appreciation. We need someone to tell us we're fantastic and beautiful. It might be just pleasure. It's all about me. I just want what I want. I don't care who you are. It might be power. It may be the only time in our life where we have power over somebody else, where that's what makes us feel good, important, what gives us pleasure. So this is hard to tell, isn't it? Because how do we know when the first flush of a relationship, the first few weeks, it might all be really nice. And for ourselves, we ourselves may not know what's driving it. We might think, oh, yeah, I just want a partner. I don't want to be alone. And that's as far as we leave it. But we start seeing what's driving it. If it's just all about me, it's going to be dysfunctional. And it comes as a rude shock. And it's kind of why you can have a relationship for a while with someone, and then you know, you might have a really nice time with somebody, but then you feel so isolated and alone. So what's it called? I don't know, something like post-coital malaise or something like that. So you get your rocks off, you have a great time, and then it's like, just get out of my house. I want to be alone. Or you leave, you don't stay the night over. And that's because there's this dysfunctional, this disjunction where now what? Because actually what was motivating us was it's all about me. And now I got what I wanted, and now what? So this really deep loneliness can be there. And we cannot understand why. So much of our culture, and especially now when the youth these days, the kids all learn about relationships and sex through porn, because it's just everywhere. And as if that's the only kind of way that we can have relationships. So the movie the movie Homework is this one. I don't know if any of you have seen this, Don John. Written, directed, and the star, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Totally amazing movie. And two other incredible actors in it. Julianne Moore, who I'll just see any movie with her in it, and Scarlett Johansson in a really unusual role for her. And this movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt made it because of this addiction to porn that so many young men have, and this totally unaware that there is such a thing as human connection. So it's an incredibly revealing movie, and it's great. It's you know, really inspiring. It's kind of like a modern day play on Don Juan. So I don't know, has anyone seen that movie, Don John? Anyone seen it? No? Oh, there
yeah,
you go.
It's
You've
great.
Seen it, Rachel?
Yeah, did you like it? Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it's very clever, I find. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's great. It just shows you all the different permutations of a motivation and what the results are, and totally relatable. So, you know, that's just two things where they're quite important things in our life, and we can see how delving in and really having the courage to question what's my driving force here? Unconsciously, what's my need? Why am I doing this? And where Buddhist psychology is different from Western psychology is that we go, okay, great, we can discover this, and then we can change. It's not like you go, oh no, this is my unconscious and there's nothing I can do about it. No. We look, we see what's there, and then we train ourselves. We train our mind. We educate ourselves. We change. So you can have real confidence that it's possible to do. And that's the great thing about that movie, Don John, that he does change. And same with the doctor. He does change. It's possible. Just ordinary human people putting in a whole lot of energy and effort. But if we have the help of Buddhist psychology, it makes it much easier to change. And so one of it is just bringing awareness to our motivation and then adjusting our motivation. So in the morning, you can become aware what's driving you, panic, attachment, someone that you're caring for, something you're inspired about, the whole range of things. Bring your awareness to that, and then you adjust it into a really good motivation that has the long-term view, the best, biggest possible benefit for oneself and others. So it's altruistic. So we adjust it. And some days it might be really easy to adjust, and other days you might have to work really, really hard. But it's about bringing our awareness to it. And we grow into it. It becomes us. We're not going to accidentally grow into a fantastic motivation. It's practice. But it's like if any of you can drive a car, like when you first started learning how to drive, it takes effort and a lot of concentration. But it changes. And after you've been driving for a couple of years, you're a different type of driver. And it's not like, oh, but underneath I'm just a learner driver. No, you've changed.
I'll start.
Yeah, Paige, go for it.
I think, yeah, it sort of made me realize that I maybe have some poor motivations. I just wrote pride, fear of failure, money, and having other people rely on me to be at certain places, which is not really doing much for me, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah.
So having other people relying on you. So again, that's just what it is. They do. But you can deepen your motivation of why. So the immediate one is for whatever reason, the practical context, why they're relying on you. But then you ask, well, why? So they're relying on me, yes. Why am I helping them? It's more than just that one thing, isn't it?
It's sort of interrogating.
Yeah.
And that it's quite uncomfortable to face that there is distance from where I am now and where I hope to be. So that's sort of maybe,
But we build those steps. So, I mean, you can do it really simply by thinking, okay, so these people that are lying on me, I have to do this thing for them. Why? Why do I have to do this thing? Because their welfare matters to me. And so why? Because I know what it's like, how it is for me, then how it is for them. So, and then we can even bring more in, and we can go, well, even whatever I do for them, it may or may not work, but by me putting in this energy, I'm creating positive energy, and that won't be wasted.
Yeah.
Same thing with money. There's nothing wrong with money. It's just if money's number one. So you go, money, great. Why? What's it for?
I've left with some good prompts probably to
that's it. It's all about the prompts, isn't it? AI is gonna just revolutionize the way that we analyze ourselves.
That's all I had to contribute.
Good on your pages, excellent.
Just to look at some motivations. Thank you.
Yes, and start where you are. Like, that's great. You write down what you have and then you build on it. Good.
Yeah, no, awesome. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I think
Rachel.
I've built habits that I know are good for me. And at the moment, I'm kind of just going through the motions with them because I know that they're good for me. I think I've lost the big picture, the causal motivation that you were talking about. So having you explain all that was really good. That and the asking why, like really drill down into it is really good. Because it's I think that's what I've kind of lost.
And it's natural. It's natural to lose it because we get so involved in the immediacy of our life. So we will lose it over and over and over again. And that's why we have to build in this little bit of a formula and do it every morning.
Yeah, exactly. And have more of an awareness of the process. And thank you.
And then, you know, especially when times are bad, then you think, well, who am I doing it for? And so you start off with yourself and everybody else who's got the same problem. So if you have depression or anxiety, you think, oh, my people, my tribe, I'm doing it for them. And so you have a natural connection. And, you know, like if you're dyslexic, you do it for my people, the dyslexic. You have a natural connection, a natural understanding. So you start off with yourself and others, your people. If you're a parent, you know, you do it for you and all the other parents. And so that already we've got some connection happening, even if we don't know individuals. We remember, in a big context.
Yeah, it widens our circle rather than it just being about us.
And I mean, that in itself is incredibly powerful because we're not alone then. And then from a Buddhist point of view, then you keep widening it until you end up, well, we're all human.
We're all the same. We all just want to be happy and not.
That's right. We're all human. Under the skin, whatever color the skin is, we're all the same. And we're all little ones. We're all little kitties once. Scared little kitties. And then you go even further and you go, well, we're all living beings. We include all the animals, all the ugly ones, all the pretty ones, everybody. So it just keeps on going like that. But again, we start where we are and with something that's meaningful to us. And I mean, that's what gives us real incentive. You know, I read those stories about, say, parents with a sick child. So they devote their life to trying to figure out how to cure that illness. And they do it for their child and everybody else's child who's got that illness. And it's a huge motivator. It gives them enormous courage in the face of big business and hospitals and people telling them they're stupid and they shouldn't bother and waste their energy, all of this. It gives them huge courage because they're doing it for more than just themselves. Okay, so thank you, Rachel. Astrid, did you have anything that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is very helpful for me to think about my motivation because I've just finished studying and I'm starting a new career and now it seems all very overwhelming going to work and like I don't know anything. So I think like keeping in mind what's important to me and having those causal motivations,
yeah,
like a long-term motivation.
Yeah, so set it as a question for yourself, Astrid, that give yourself like you've got 6 weeks to figure out why you're alive. this is you know, what is the purpose for you being alive?
It actually, I thought of some terms when you were talking about the functional and dysfunctional motivations as well. It's external validation and internal validation. Like,
yes.
Like for me, I've just become a lawyer, and like I think external validation really motivates people to begin with, like money. And like if I become a lawyer, people are going to think, you know, certain things about me that I don't know, I'm smart or something, and like that's motivating.
Yeah.
To become aware, but actually like what's more important is to be able to help people and like not losing sight of that.
Yeah, because the motivation in the moment, competitiveness, being able to have the to and fro and the parry, you need that, but that can't be all of it. And the really good lawyers, they have this deep purpose, don't they, that keeps them, it also stops them being corrupted.
Yeah,
that's the only way, because otherwise it's not the people decide I'm going to be a lawyer and you know practice corruption. No one ever thinks that. They just get sight waylaid. So it becomes a real protection to have this, why am I doing it? And so it's not the external thing. So you may lose a case, but if your motivation was right to benefit, it's not all lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Excellent. Good, good, good. So here we have a little summary from His Holiness, setting a safe direction in our life. Ask 3 times to deepen your purpose. Why am I doing this? Who are you doing it for? Who are your people? Who are you living for? And again, we widen that. It's got to be for more than just us. And then connect with our support, our refuge, our lineage, our mentors. So this is remembering that we're not alone, that we have a huge amount of support available to us. So there's the whole Western, canon of philosophers, of different psychological traditions, of neuroplasticity. There's all of this that we can draw on. There is a wealth of understanding of mind and emotions from the Buddhist psychology that is, you know, to this date, the only one that can completely liberate us from suffering. And then we have a whole lot of practitioners that do it and show us how to do it, that we have to call on, that can help us. And many times when we're feeling quite bad, we forget this. We forget that we have a world of support at our fingertips. And again, His Holiness saying, whenever possible, I'll show kindness. It's always possible. So setting our direction, setting our motivation in life, it becomes our direction, where we're going in our life. And so the whole class has been on motivation. Now we've come to the end. Now we'll have a dedication. So we tie it all up together. So all of the energy and everything, we kind of tie it up with a lovely bow. But just before we finish, are there any last questions or comments or anything that stood out for you today? Anything that you're going to take away with you and go, yep, that's the thing that I'm going to work on or remember? Or any comments or questions? Anything? Well, if you do have questions that come out throughout the week, then please write them down so that you can bring them along next week. And so let's dedicate. We can think that Everything that we've discussed and talked about is like a rainfall of light, of drops of light, just falling into our mind and illuminating our mind, absorbing into us, so that we don't have to race after the points and the realizations to try to hold on to them. They just rain into us like light and absorb into us, deeply into us. And then we can come back to these at our leisure again and again and continue that inner conversation, that inner reflection. And so let's dedicate for our own benefit and for the benefit of all others. And there is this really lovely dedication prayer that I'll put up. So due to all the merits of the three times accumulated by me and by others, merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking to me, may any being be freed in that very second from all their sufferings, diseases, spirit harms, negative karmas, and obscurations, and may they abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever. So it's such a nice dedication. It means anyone that sees you, even if you're there in the courtroom and they're your opponent, anybody that yells at you, just by having that connection with you may be beneficial. May not be at the time, but in the long run, may it bring only benefit and never harm, and may it bring the really biggest benefit. So thanks so much, everyone, for coming along, and I hope you sign up for next week, or if you get the package, then I'll be able to hook you up with the catch-up classes and the PowerPoints from this week and the homework sheet that I'm about to finalize and stick up online. So take care, everyone. Nice to meet you all.
Thank you so much, Mithy. Thank you, everyone. See you
soon. See you again. Time.